Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
It is 3 p.m. on Thursday, and that means it's time to meet your maker. I am your host, Rachel Wharton. Today with me in the studio, I also have my occasional guest host, John Taggart, who is also the maker of the theme song you just heard. Say hello, John.
Hello, how are you?
And if should you happen to be in the New York City area this Saturday, John's band Hospitality, Huntronic, which is the theme song you just heard, will be playing at Rippers on the Boardwalk from 2 to 9. And Rippers is a collaboration between Roberta's Pizza, where we are at right now, and the Meat Hook. So check it out this Saturday from 2 to 9.
It's going
to
be a really, really good time.
But more importantly, the most important guest in the room today is Philip Colicchio, who is not a jam maker or a spice maven or someone who makes ketchup or baby food, but a lawyer. He is a co-founder of Taylor Colicchio and Silverman LLP. And for the past 20 years, he's focused his practice on restaurants, entertainment, and hospitality. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Rachel. It's nice to be here.
So I did have to get one very important question out of the way for anyone who follows the food world. I'm sure you've been asked this question several hundred thousand times. Are you related to Tom Colicchio?
Proudly, yes.
Proudly, yes.
Yes.
And you've also represented him.
I have, and I do, and I'm really proud of that, too. Tom is my first cousin, and we grew up very close, as cousins do, in Elizabeth, New Jersey, which is the Brooklyn of New Jersey. And we've been close from our childhood.
Is that how you came to focus on this for your legal practice?
Well, it wasn't the first experience I had as an attorney involving a restaurant, but it certainly was the experience that brought me to a point where I realized not too many people were doing what I was doing, and certainly not too many people were there at the forefront when chefs really became an integral part of the scene of New York and the rest of the country.
So what was it? What period was that? Was that 20 years ago? 25
wow.
years ago?
Gee, it wasn't that long. I would say that it was probably in the early 90s. Tom, not surprisingly, was very interested in really doing his own thing.
And he was about to leave Gramercy Tavern or
Well, actually, it was around that time when we got serious involving our relationship as attorney and client. but before then, it was a series of just general questions that one cousin might ask another cousin, and I'm a little bit older. And was always happy to help, but particularly when Gramercy Tavern opened, I became it became a relationship where we actually needed to formalize it because I was a practicing attorney.
Right. You're good at keeping things formalized.
Well, that's important. It's important. And soon enough, it became a situation where I said, "Tom, I actually need to charge you for this stuff." And he said,
lot.
"Okay, let's go." Well, he might think a lot. He might think never enough. By the way, it's nice to be interviewed or questioned by a James Beard Award winner who's not asking me about my bill.
Oh, you really represent Beard? Oh, because they're all chefs.
That's right. Yes, exactly. A number of Beard Award winners.
I probably could have used your help back then anyway.
Well, you know where to find me.
Well, actually, so to step back, what are the kinds of things that you do for your clients in the food and hospitality industry? What are some of the things that you can help them do or achieve?
Yeah, well, it really runs the gamut, but what I really like to do most is help people get started and keep them on the right track. Like any business, you really want to have not only a foundation of talent, and in this circumstance, certainly culinary talent and people who understand the value of rolling up your sleeves and working hard, but you really also need a team of professionals to help guide you through what really is a maze, especially if you're opening in the New York region. So I like to make sure that my clients in the restaurant industry certainly have a feel for the real estate that they're going to be involved in, for the capital improvements that are going to be made, because they're often very expensive and sometimes surprisingly so. Getting an understanding of how particularly New York City works from a bureaucratic standpoint. And some really wonderful things have happened in the city in the last few years that I'm happy to chat about that make that process a little easier. And then things like you wouldn't think about, things like insurance, things like trying to make sure that you've got the right kind of coverage if there's a blackout and you lose all your food. You know, things like that happen. So, and you need a team of advisors, really, I think, to do it right. So but I enjoy putting that. I enjoy putting the teams together. Yeah.
So people, people come to you not so much for like, I need, can you just read over this contract or write it for me? But basically, to start from the very beginning of the process, you tell them what they need to be thinking about before they even begin.
Yeah, most lawyers like to say that if I had only met the client at the outset, right. I wouldn't be sitting here in court with them or, you know, or evaluating whether or not they should file for bankruptcy protection. But that's part of what I do. The other part that's a little, you know, sexier is when I work with chefs who are going to do these incredibly interesting third-party operator contracts. If a well-known chef
could you give an example of one of those?
Well, sure. I think the easiest one was when Tom decided that he would take a chance when the MGM Grand called him 10 years ago to put a steakhouse out in the MGM Grand Hotel in Las Vegas. And those are pretty complicated negotiations, and those are pretty complicated arrangements. And the good news certainly was that Tom was not a neophyte, but he knew that I knew that world. So, you know, we went out to Las Vegas together and spent a few days evaluating, and then the general counsel at the MGM Grand and I literally sat in a room and, you know, went through a 50-page contract, and took a little while, but we got it done, and it's been an incredible success for Tom and for his company and for his investors. Really important.
Are there any other industries? I mean, so with a restaurant, you have liquor, you have public health, you have the USDA, you have the FDA, you have all. Is there any other business that is as complicated?
Hospitals,
yes. Who actually have food?
Oh, wow.
I work with them. Well, I actually have gotten very involved in hospitality education. I feel like that's an important and often overlooked component of this industry, because it's, if you're trained in the hospitality industry, you really have a guarantee of employability.
Mm-hmm.
Not employment, but employability. Because food service and hospitality is required everywhere from our, you know, our correctional facilities to elder care. It's an incredibly huge part of the economy.
But when you say you're involved in hospitality education, does that mean you're teaching a class on the legal aspects, or what's your role in that?
I have. I've been lucky enough to work with, it might sound a little funny from coming from the North, but I've been really fortunate to be able to work with the Auburn University School of Hotel and Restaurant Management down in Auburn, Alabama, who are putting out incredibly talented graduates into the hospitality world. I teach a class down there once a semester for a couple of days. I also work, because I live in Princeton, New Jersey, which is right in between New York and Philadelphia. I've had the privilege of working with the Philadelphia School District on their vocational component of training young people for the hospitality industry. And where I fit in there is I look at curriculum. And I get some of the restaurants in Philadelphia to engage some of the students in the summertime, and during school year, to give them a sense of what it's like to work in a restaurant.
What does your syllabus look like? What are the types of things that you're going over?
Wow. What people are interested in most when I go and do these things are these third-party food and beverage operation contracts.
Because that's what they—that's what they're aspiring to do, or they.
Well, it, because I think mainly it's because they've become so popular, meaning almost any hotel group that you look at now has got a segment in it that engages chefs or restaurateurs that are third parties to come in and operate their food and beverage operations and their restaurants. So people see that and they see employment opportunity. And so
they want to go work for those?
They do.
Groups.
Right. And because it usually they get money. Well, but think about it. If I'm a young person and I'm culinary minded, if I have a chance to work, and let's use Tom as an example, if I have a chance to work in a restaurant that is operated by Tom Colicchio's company, well, then I've got an opportunity to learn from someone who's really been successful. And if Tom has 5 or 6 restaurants around the country, and I can work for one, I don't know, in Atlanta or something like that, I would want to aspire to that, I think, if I were a student. So that's been the benefit of seeing the growth of these third party operations. But I did also this year I had a blast because I was asked to present a Restaurant 101 seminar at the Gugamuga event.
Which is
in
a
Prospect
music,
Park.
Yeah, music and food festival. Maybe food more than music.
And you were there?
Oh, yeah, I was.
We were both there.
I was for both days.
I wish I'd gone on Sunday.
Well, I went on Saturday for the purpose of saying, how am I going to handle Sunday? And you know what? I think it was incredibly visionary. And I think that it certainly had a few bumps. But I was really personally thrilled because there was an education tent that was set up, and my subject matter was called Restaurant 101, how to put together the team to help you open a restaurant. And we had a lot of people who were really interested and who followed up with me afterwards, and I felt like we had accomplished our mission.
What were some of the things that you talked about?
Well, as we started out here, we talked about, right, how do you find your real estate, right? And and what's your budget? And a lot of people don't think about budgets, or they don't think about them nearly enough. Negotiating your rent in New York City.
You can do that.
You can do that. Right. But you are, you know, you're swimming with sharks. Mm-hmm. So you really need to have somebody who understands how to maintain the sharks. You know, and
are
how,
you a shark maintainer, or do you find the shark maintainer?
I'm a maintainer of sharks.
Oh, nice.
However, there are really great and talented real estate brokers who can help a new restaurateur narrow down choices in neighborhoods and things like that.
Because I don't think anybody really wants anybody to fail, you know.
They don't, but and as a matter of fact, that's one of my mantras is I root for everyone,
right?
Because the more success there is in the restaurant business,
exactly,
the happier humanity is.
Yes. It also means work for me. Thank you very much.
Well, it does, and unfortunately, sometimes unwinding them creates more work, and it creates unhappy work. And usually it's because the operators aren't prepared for the discipline that's required financially in operating a business.
Like a restaurant.
Even a small one person.
Because, I mean, like opening a laundromat is a guarantee. You know, you're going to have money.
It is a guarantee, but don't.
In quarter form.
But remember those little things, right? Like, I've got to pay sales tax.
Right.
Oh, my. Right, I've got. Do I have a percentage rent component in my lease? Did I mistakenly forget that I'm responsible for the water charges and not the landlord?
Right.
You know, believe me, there's a lot of crossover in it, and I'm a believer in discipline. I think discipline is critical, and that's why it's very hard to do this with, you know, a chef being the chef and the operator. And the reservationist and the dishwasher repair guy or gal, and it's a tough business. It's a physically demanding
for
business.
So many people. That's their business model, and is that they work 753 hours a week.
And I'm certain that you've met them. I tease chefs by saying, "Let me see if you're really as experienced as you say you are. Let me see your feet." Because if they're not flat, I don't believe you.
Wait. Repeat that again.
Flat feet.
You want to see the chef's flat
feet? Absolutely. Absolutely. Forget their hands for a minute.
Oh, their feet.
If they have flat feet, that means they're working hard.
Yes. Okay, but we are about to take a break, but before we do, I just wanted to point out that I think that there is actually a couple we can see through the window actually working on their restaurant plan right in front of us.
Yes, they are.
Which is pretty funny.
They look disciplined. Yeah.
We're going to take a 2-minute break, and we'll be back for more of Meet Your Maker.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back to Meet Your Maker. We are talking to Phil Colicchio, who is a partner in Taylor Colicchio and Silverton LLP. He's a lawyer. He helps other people make restaurants. But I think recently you also started working with people in music because, as you were saying before the break, there's so much crossover now between the two industries. So how did that come to be?
Yeah, it's I find it really interesting. A few years ago, I like to see live music. I find it very life affirming, and
as long as the band is good,
it's live performance is just great. But I was lucky enough to go to Bonnaroo down in Manchester, Tennessee, with my son and with my cousin Tom and with his son, and we're having a wonderful time enjoying the music. But we observed that the musicians were very intrigued every time they saw Tom. And one of the creators of Bonnaroo, a fellow by the name of Corin Capshaw, and I had a meeting while we were down there, and Corin began to brainstorm about, wow, we've really got to begin to integrate music and food, because there's some.
Wait, are you saying that you're the reason that the great Googa Mooga exists?
Heck no, that's Jonathan Mayers, who is Mr. Capshaw's partner in Bonnaroo, saw the same thing that we saw, but he's the one who took that giant leap, and I was flattered when he asked me to become involved even a little bit, because I thought that it was a really great idea. But personally, when I get a chance to get on my soapbox about it, I say that the process, I think, of creating music and creating food are very similar. You spend a lot of time alone. You make a lot of mistakes. When you finally get to a point where you feel like you've got something good, you then have to share it with your closest colleagues, your band, meaning, or your kitchen staff. And then ultimately comes the judgment day. You put it out, and you get immediate feedback on it. So I think the process of a songwriter and a musician and a chef and what they go through to create is actually quite similar.
There's also the potential and aspirations to fame and celebrity, which not every industry has.
No, they don't. And that's a pretty new thing in the restaurant industry. And I hear a number of my clients who are very successful at what they do worry that too many people are getting into this business for really what they think are the wrong reasons. And I'll tell you what, it's like someone asking me these days, well, should I go to law school? And I say, well, if you really want to be a lawyer, you should. but if you want to kill 3 years of your life and trying to decide what to do, don't do that. Mm-hmm. And if you want to be a movie star, if you want to be a television star, honest, go to where the television things are. Go to California, mm-hmm. or go to drama school and acting school. But please don't go to the Culinary Institute
to become famous.
I have to say, it's probably a longer shot than somebody making it in the NFL or the NBA.
But it does. At Tom's level, for example, I mean, think about the amount of work help he needs from you, the number of agreements and things that he's doing and products that he has his hands in and places that he has his hands in. I mean, the amount of contracts that he's signed in the past 10 years was monumental.
It's a huge business, and that's, I think, one of the really segue a little bit on that into the what I've seen from the city of New York. They've recognized the huge impact that the restaurant industry has on the economy of the city. And the mayor's office has created a business acceleration team that focuses solely on restaurants, helps restaurants get open and helps them stay open.
Yeah, didn't they just release an ad campaign about this?
Yeah, they did.
You know, we saw Mass Brothers Chocolate in the advertisement, mm-hmm. remember?
Oh, because they're opening in a new facility in the Seaport.
Yeah, I got to say, it's one of the real advancements in the industry in New York, because the maze that exists, right. and it's a big city, so there's going to be regulatory mazes, and to have someone assigned to you from the mayor's office who can they're not there to change documents or anything, but they're there to make sure that you can get from one agency to another agency to another agency within a reasonable period of time. And that saves money.
Or even to tell you which documents you're supposed to even have.
I have a question. Do you help restaurants or any restaurant with health inspections?
I was going to ask that too. Yeah. What happens when they get a D? Are you involved?
Well, usually the only involvement that I get is that there are times, savvy investors will say, I will invest so long as, and then there's a list of things, and one of them is maintaining a health rating of X or Y or Z. Mm-hmm. You don't want to default on anything like that. But usually, I think having the health inspection ratings is great. I think most consumers do. And again, back to that idea of being able to create a team, I know who to call to help you get that rating back up by helping mm-hmm. to resolve the problem. So that's where I think I come in and help. I don't usually have to go and fight about it. It's usually figuring out who can resolve it for you quickest and most efficiently.
So I was thinking that a role that you're starting to do is almost more of a consultant with the music food crossover, helping people make connections.
It is, and I do have a few years back. I created a consulting business, and I did that for a very simple and straightforward reason that will probably make you chuckle. I would sit, I would be asked to go to sit in a meeting with a chef and a restaurateur and some big hotel group that wanted them to come in and work. And they would sit down and say, this is my attorney. And so the conversation kind of stopped right there. Mm-hmm. So in order to facilitate those conversations a little bit more, I said, well, I'm really, I'm kind of acting as your business advisor at this point, because we haven't got a contract to deal with and we're not negotiating anything. So I said, well, checked with the Bar Association. I was able to create the consulting company. And now when I sit down in a meeting and they say, this is my advisor, the conversation just rolls right.
But is it? I mean, lawyers have always been called counselors.
We have, but we also have something that's really important that a lot of other groups don't have, and that's the recognition of conflict. So, if a client of mine, let's say the Ritz-Carlton group that I represent, wants to engage Andrew Carmelini, who I also represent, I can't do that as an attorney because I have conflicts of interest. But what I can do in that circumstance is to say I can act as a facilitator, as a consultant, to bring you two together, and then I would step away, or they would waive conflict later and I could help put the contract together. But the benefit of having somebody like me involved is that my experience helps get arrangements done efficiently, because they can drag on and be very expensive.
I have a question. What's one of your youngest clients in Brooklyn?
Ruth at the counting room.
The counting room?
Has a terrific bar.
Which neighborhood is it in?
It's on...
I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's of course, now that the name is slipping my mind.
Because I was actually going to ask a very similar question, which mm-hmm. it seems, I mean, many of your clients are at the top of their game. They've been cooking for mm-hmm. decades. They are now really well known, mm-hmm. even by non-food obsessed people. And how often are you working with the people who are, you know, this is their very first, this is their baby. They yeah. don't know anything about this.
More regularly than you would imagine.
Mm-hmm. How did they find you?
Well, usually very few people just sort of start out by saying I'm going to open up a restaurant. They've worked in a kitchen or a couple of different kitchens.
For maybe one of your clients.
Exactly. And so my name is known to them and they'll reach out to me. I'm lucky that I get a lot of referrals from other people. And just because now you've put my head in Brooklyn, I'm really excited that our friends at Terroir are opening on Fifth Avenue. They're opening in Park Slope.
Really? Do you know the cross street? Because I can walk there, and I'm very excited about this news. Well, that's amazing news for Park Slope.
It is,
actually,
and you
for
know what?
Who are
and
listening
it was again. That was one that was great fun. I put together the limited liability company. Mm-hmm. I helped negotiate the operating agreement between the investors. I negotiated the lease with the landlord. And it was, again, watching something come from an idea, to the day it opens. It's a very satisfying thing.
What about certain techniques? Do you have to help clients with sous vide or gigantic, huge in line ovens or
grills? It's a great question. The answer is yes, and it's on a number of fronts. But sous vide, of course, I tease some of my clients about that because I say, okay, I got some plastic bags too. How are we going to do this? But a lot of that cuisine is deals with intellectual property,
mm-hmm.
and so you have to be ready, and you got to know when you're tripping over an intellectual property issue.
I hadn't even thought about that
aspect. Yeah, yeah. And that happens a lot, frankly, with names. And one of my partners, Lisa Peroni, is a terrific intellectual property specialist and has been working in the restaurant industry for years. So we've come up with kind of a prototype that we literally evaluate and check the boxes. And if we can, from experience now, we know if we're tripping over an intellectual property issue. But, the issues that involve those big stoves are things like, do we buy them or do we lease them? And if we lease them, gosh, how do we deal with that?
Right.
And once it's a fixture, it becomes a law school exam in right. some ways. And unfortunately, the exam usually comes if the business is troubled and can't finish it.
Speaking of a law school exam, it occurs to me that, as you said, your business has grown organically along with the food industry. Is this now a track in law school?
Interesting question. I've been asked that by a number of law students, and I've been asked by some young lawyers. I would say to you that there is certainly room, particularly in New York and metropolitan area law schools, for a course that deals with restaurant and hospitality law. And there are some textbooks out there, because if you're in a school of hospitality, you usually take a business law class. And I've read some of those textbooks, and they're pretty basic, But this is such a vibrant and growing industry, to have a little bit of expertise, I think, would be valuable in the metropolitan area. But again, like I said, if you want to be a rock star, mm-hmm. learn how to play the guitar.
Or do you have any? Do you have any famous chefs that you represent?
Oh, yes, like all of them, goodness. Probably.
I represent.
Well, I mean, for our listeners, I'm sorry.
All of them.
A lot, and you know, it's you know, because of the success that Tom has achieved, he was nice enough in the early days when somebody said, "Well, how did you organize this or that?" And he would say in his inimitable style, Kofel, very quick. And so I love some of the, I've become great friends with some of my clients and Andrew Carmelini. I've worked with the sort of late great Gray Coons, he of the Four Stars. I have worked with Marco Canora. I've worked with Dave Chang in the past. I've worked with a lot of big names.
Yes.
But it's frankly it's the business side of it that intrigues me most. The celebrity that comes with it, I find it to be fun. It gives you incredible access to things, but it's also a distraction. You know that if I were romanced by the celebrity of it all, I'd never get any work done.
I don't doubt that there will one day be a celebrity restaurant attorney, and it could be you.
Well, you never know.
There's all these you know, I'm a food writer. There are people now aspire to be food writers they never did before. People aspire to be rooftop farmers. People aspire to be urban beekeepers, and now they're going to aspire to be restaurant attorneys.
Well, if you've got the makeup that says I like to help creative people achieve their vision, and if you get some psychic income out of that as well as financial income,
you have to think, so many people in this just think they're alone,
yeah.
You know, and they think, oh my God, where's all this fear coming from, and how am I going to do this? And
well, that, you know what, that, and that, that's yeah. that's the essence of the team, you right. know. I mean, that's why you need to have a support system. Whether it's your family,
right.
you know, or whether it's your personal relationships or your right. business, it's very hard to go it alone. Now, some people are born to go it alone, you know, and they're incredibly successful at it. But I think most people need a team. You know, they need a team, and they need somebody who knows how to bring a team together.
Oh, yes, one last question: what is the best thing you ate at Googa Mooga?
Oh boy.
Because you were in the your boot tent was in the VIP area. Actually, Heritage Radio Network was
well,
there too.
You know what? I didn't have it. No, it was not.
No,
I was not. I was with the people.
Right, because I think Matt Timms was hosting a a hot sauce competition there next to you.
I did go over to see what was going on at the VIP area, and I thought that it was interesting. And I'm embarrassed to tell you that I didn't get to eat too much. I did get one of Mark Vetri's hot dogs. Mark Vetri from Philadelphia did a specialty hot dog that I thought was great, and I'm sure I'm going to make some people mad, but I had a Kriff dog, and I don't think it didn't compare.
Well, I'm about to taste, I think, the pesto that you brought.
Yeah, tell us about this.
Well, we knew we were coming on a show called Meet Your Maker.
I'm going to put it on my pizza.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in your scrambled eggs, I'll give you that, too. But my wife jarred some beautiful pesto last night from the community garden that we have back near where we live. So I wanted to make sure that we just
finished our pesto, Rachel.
Yes.
Well, thank you. And here you go. You're going to love it. It's a little garlicky.
You've been listening to Phil Colicchio from Taylor Colicchio and Silverman LLP. He's the attorney to the future culinary stars of America. This is Rachel Wharton, and you've been listening to Meet Your Maker on Heritage Radio Network.
Yay.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.